Welcome to the Canon Convos podcast, where we speak to Australia's most inspiring photographers and videographers to find out what makes them tick and hear about the tools they use for their craft. All right, welcome everybody. Today we have on the show time-lapse photographer Matthew Vanderputter. Did I say that right?
Okay. Almost. Vanderputter. Or Vanderput. That's fine. Appreciate you trying.
I've tried many times and I think I failed every time. We've gone through the motions several times and I'll get there. Matthew, how are you?
I'm good. I'm great, actually. I'm too hot. That's the problem. London is having a 34 degree day today. And, you know, I'm not used to that anymore. It's changed. Besides the not really a heat wave, but just a hot day, I'm great. Besides a global pandemic, it's been
that little annoying
little thing that happened, or is still happening, I guess. No, it's been good. I just wrapped up a couple of video projects, and this week I shot a ton of content for my YouTube channel and website, and I've fully edited everything and I've scheduled everything. So I've got like 3 newsletters going out next week, and I'm excited to not have to do anything because I will be on a boat in Italy on a lake.
Okay.
I'm pretty excited about that.
Sounds pretty amazing. So what is work looking like right now? Because, you know, it's changed for everybody. The industry has changed worldwide. How's it looking? What's the breakdown? Are you getting enough work coming in? Are you shooting differently? Are you taking on different kind of roles?
It was an interesting start. When was it? Maybe 5 months ago. There was like 3 months of nothing. And I was like, finally, 7 years in the freelance game. This is it. It's a combination of finally I've been found out to not be legit and also a pandemic. So that's it. All the work's gone. But funnily enough, at the same time, I just finished writing my last ebook, which is about setting up passive income streams. And the timing was so weird when the whole pandemic happened. It was quite, I felt
quite
a bit
a
weird.
Coincidence, son.
Felt a bit weird launching a book when so many people, you know, when there's so many money issues and stuff like that. But then after 3 months, all of a sudden, in I think the span of 2-3 days, I landed like 4 video jobs, a couple of brands to make content. And that took up, I want to say, like a month and a half, I think. And then I finished that up. And then I kept focusing, still trying to do the social media, posting, you know, commenting, sharing, filming for YouTube, writing for my website and for the newsletter and stuff. And I think we're back to just, I mean, for me at least, kind of back to normal. Like, obviously, there's way less travel than I usually do. I haven't traveled this little in, I don't know, 6-7 years. I haven't spent this long in one city in a really long time. But yeah, besides that, it's been, it's good. I'm very, very blessed. I feel very happy that, or lucky, I guess, that I've had, that I've been able to keep busy and have some money coming in and all that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, I'd love to get into passive income and those kind of topics. But I want to go back to the beginning. I like to start these with the same question, which is when was your first Canon camera? When did you buy your first Canon camera or use your first Canon camera, and what was that like?
I don't know how old I was. I don't know if they still make the series. It's the Canon Ixus pocket camera series.
Gone way back. Okay.
Way back. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I mean, I think I had the same.
It wasn't my camera. It was my mom's camera. Actually, I've got to thank my mom for a lot of my photography.
Apologies to anyone listening who just listened to me say, you were going way back and thinking pocket digital camera, way back. Okay.
Yeah. That's ages to you.
In my lifespan, that's way back.
I'm thinking this is like 20 years ago, probably. For reference, I'm 30, fresh person. but now my mom had a Canon Ixus series, which I always loved because it was, yeah, I don't know if they still make them. If you see them, they're super tiny pocket cameras with little zoom lens that comes out. And then after that, she had a 450D, which was my first DSLR that I started playing with, that I where I was trying to figure out what all these buttons meant. I love photography, not consciously, I think. I like the idea of making photos and doing all that. And I don't think that camera shot video at the time. which I've always done on the side as well. But yeah, photography, it was a 450D. And then after that, I bought the couple generations later. My first Canon camera that I bought was a 600D, which I think kind of started, like at the start of my career, I was doing a lot of like time-lapse, hyperlapse photography at festivals. And a lot of it in that first year was shot on the 600D. Still have that camera. There's a lot of emotional value in that little device. Mm. Yeah, 600D, and then I bought some lenses, and then eventually I stepped up to a... I was very close to buying a 7D secondhand, because that was... It's the single, you know, 7D, not 60 or 600. It was like... Mm-hmm. It's like a 5D series at 70, like super stepping cool it up. Sports. Fast shooting, frame rates, blah, blah. But I'm glad I didn't, because that was still been a crop camera, and I made the switch to a full frame. When was this? I'm thinking 11, 12? Somewhere along that time, I bought a 5D3. Which I also still have. I've got issues with getting rid of cameras. There's a camera sitting right there. Yeah. Yeah, I've got cameras all over the house.
I've got a couple back here too.
Now I've got a 1DX2, got two 62s. I'm filming on one. There's one there. I've got a couple of pocket cameras. Still got the 5D3, the 600D. Okay. And now I'm kind of figuring out like what's next? R5? Probably.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm fairly certain. I don't think R6, because like I really do want the pixels. I used to have a 5DSR as well. But I sold that because I was like, these files
are
too
big. So you basically have every model that Canon has ever come out with somewhere in your apartment right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I should sell them. I don't know.
No, I'm with you. I like to hold on to things.
Yeah.
Because we put our gear through so many experiences. So there's memories attached to it.
Yeah.
I've got...
Also, when I bought the 1DX Mark II, I think 4 years ago, I wanted it for the video features, and I bought that camera and I taught myself how to shoot better video. And because of the dual pixel autofocus, the way you can trigger focus pulls and stuff, it literally changed my career. Just like at the time, like the 600D and the 5D3 changed my career, because it allowed me to shoot better time lapses and hyperlapses. But yeah, it changed the path of my career, and it opened up so many more doors, and so much more work came from having these video capabilities in there.
It's interesting to think about it that way, because now that you've said that, I can see how when I got the 7D, that changed the pathway of my career too, because suddenly having the ease of recording video without really having to know much about that area, and suddenly just being able to say, hey, we just took some stills, I can press one button here.
Yeah.
Why don't you play a song? I mean, that's how I, you know, got to know so many musicians that I'm friends with now and I work with now. It started with me just saying, I can record an acoustic video right now in the laneway. I don't have to do anything.
Do
I can just hold the camera. It'll look really nice.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing, but it'll still look great. And then
it kind of looks like a photo. And if I hit rec, it's a video.
It's a photo, but it's moving. And, you know, like previously before that camera, the thought of doing professional looking video seemed out of reach. It seemed like, oh, I need special equipment to do that.
Where are you now with percentage wise photo/video? Because you do both, obviously. Can you put a percentage on it? Is it 50-50? Is it 70?
You know 30? What? It'd be close to 50-50 now, which I never thought it would get to that breakdown. Video was introduced and it was always an extra thing. It was always, I considered myself quite knowledgeable in the area of photography and quite proficient. And I always saw video as, oh, it's just an extra thing I can do if the job needs it. I know enough to get by. Mm. But I guess the industry is evolving and the needs of brands and clients and just the everyday person as well. Video is coming into it more. So I would say there's a large number of jobs now that are video only without.
I think if anyone's listening and they've been thinking about maybe exploring video and haven't done so already, just get to it, honestly, because it is such a good skill to have. And what you just said is so true as well. The one man or one woman band operation is so prevalent these days. And I've done huge, just like you, like you've done some stupid big productions just by yourself that probably 10-15 years ago would require a whole crew, and now you're just kind of like, oh, it's slap a little light there and on that, and then we'll do it. And then, you know, like a day you shoot a music video.
That's basically my thought process. Yeah. it's very true. Yeah. It's very true. You are very valuable.
Mm.
If you can take photos, you can take videos, you can edit photos and videos.
Especially with
you
tourism
understand
stuff.
Social media. And you don't have to be, this is what it comes down to, you don't have to be the best at any of those things individually. But if you can do all of them to a pretty decent degree, I think you are much more valuable to a client.
But it's still good
depending on what the job is.
To specialize, to have a niche, right? Or do you think you can be a success? I mean, I know you can be, but what's your...
This was lower down on my list of questions.
Okay, sorry. I'm skipping ahead.
I want to know what kind of things you were shooting at the beginning and how that's evolved to what you do now, because you are very... You've cornered your little area, your little niche of the market in... How would I best describe it? I know I said time, that's photography before. Is that how you describe what you do?
Last night we met someone new and like, oh, what do you do? I was like, oh, I do time-lapse photography. And then it's either or. It's either they respond with like, oh, cool, time-lapse. Yeah, I love that. Or they're like kind of blank stare. And then I'm like, I have to explain what it is. It's like, you know those nature shots, where the clouds move.
Fast forward through nature.
Yeah, I discovered time-lapse through an online video. I had just bought that 600D, I think this is in 2010 or whenever. Saw this video of a guy on Vimeo, the Canary Islands, all this really cool time-lapse footage. And I saw that and I was just gobsmacked. Is that a word? My jaw hit the floor. I was just sitting there. Holy, what is this? How's this done? Is this video? Are these photos? Trying to like read his Spanish video description, trying to figure out.
Hey, I think I saw the same video.
Terje Sørgaard.
And is there another one called The Mountain or something?
The Mountain, it's called, yeah.
Sorry. Okay, yeah. I saw that.
It went
the same
nuts.
Reaction.
Yeah. So then I took that intrigue and I took it to Google, I think, and I just kind of started trying to figure out like, can I do this? Is that a thing I can do? And at the time you could install this extra firmware on your camera, on your SD card, and it would load a time-lapse timer internally in your 600D. And that allowed me to shoot my first time-lapses inspired by this video. And then I started shooting and you know, it was crap. It was very bad. But I'd never stopped shooting and I never stopped making bad things. But then I realized they're bad and then you get better. That's one of my biggest, the number one advice is shoot, fail, learn, repeat. Mm-hmm. That's literally how I got to where I am right now, which is, as you mentioned, like, yeah, I've cornered a little niche. There's not a lot of people globally that make a living off of time-lapse photography. There's a lot of people that do a little bit of time-lapse photography, but I'm, you know, very well known in the I guess, photography industry or online I hate saying it, like as an influential time-lapse photographer, purely because I've managed to get a following because I was at the right place at the right time with social media. It's safe to say I'm fairly well known for time-lapse.
Yeah, which is smart. I mean, it's a great business, great position for your business to be in.
I mean, and glad I discovered that. It's like, oh, this isn't cool niche. And at the time I was like, it's too niche. I shouldn't be sharing too much because like, who's going to care? And then like 6 years later, I'm like, oh, goddamn. If you were,
I mean that shows a lot of foresight. Well, maybe not foresight, maybe just blind dedication.
Yeah.
Or did you have some foresight? You know, at what point did you start thinking, all right, this very specific thing I'm doing that I'm putting out into the world and it isn't getting too many dividends? Did you foresee that if I stick at it, this could be my thing and this could be my career? Because I would assume at the start, you're just thinking, this is just great and I love it. And like,
sweet
it's
hobby.
So specific that surely.
Yeah, totally.
Surely not.
Totally. I remember, I don't know who it was, but I remember saying this because it made me sad at the time. I was like, oh, I love this so much. And I'm literally obsessed with it. And still like every day I'm like looking at the sky, looking at the clouds, like what kind of clouds do we have? Should I go shoot? Are my batteries charged? But I remember saying to someone, probably more obsessed because it was more of a hype then, because it was still fresh and new. And I said, like, you know, this is such a cool thing because, you know, you show the world from a different perspective. But it's so sad. Like, I'll never be able to make a living out of this because who in their right mind is going to pay for some idiot to sit somewhere with two tripods and two cameras and just sitting around for hours scrolling Twitter and all this traveling gear and work and then all the post-processing, hours and hours of work, hard drives, expensive software, and then you end up with like 10 seconds of video. Like, who's going to pay for that? No one. Until you meet people that have like the right vision and the right budget and the realization that the only way you can get those 10 seconds of really cool, really high quality, really unique footage is by doing all that. So if you budget mm-hmm. for it and you show people that your little niche thing can add quite a bit of value from a purely visual point of view or a narrative point of view when you're doing transitions specifically at a scene or a location, then you can make it work.
Mm-hmm. And now that, you know, people are aware that this kind of visuals can be created, mm. now you are part of a, like you said before, you know, very small group of people that do that professionally. And
yeah.
to be able to do that, you know, you need to have invested so much of your time, equipment and everything into that. So it's not as an accessible genre for other people to come in as well. Mm. You really got to know what you're doing.
It has become so much easier now. Mm-hmm. with just like with anything, you know, knowledge has been democratized through social media and YouTube. Yeah. When I discovered there's another niche within time-lapse, which is called hyperlapse, which is like, you know, big moving, sweeping shots where you physically move the camera for every frame, not on a slider, but like on a tripod or a dolly. When I saw that for the first time, this Russian dude also on Vimeo, I saw that and I was like, I need to know how to do this right now. So I started testing and I was editing a YouTube video yesterday about different kinds of time-lapse. And I went back to my first hyperlapse test videos. And it's so funny to look back on that because for some reason I watermarked my name in like the middle of the thing as if someone's going to steal this crappy test footage. But like at the time, like hyperlapse photography didn't exist. It wasn't a word. The technique existed, but there was nothing. There's nothing. There's no information online. We coined, me and a bunch of others, or a bunch of like a couple of people on a forum at the time. Like, what are we going to call this new thing? After we were playing around with it for a bit, what are we going to call this new technique? And so like, it's walklapse or this and that. It's like, I like hyperlapse. Let's go with that. And then like 5 years later, Instagram has an app called Hyperlapse and Microsoft's got like a research team and stuff.
Wow, but if you I didn't know that.
Yeah, crazy.
You were part of coining the term.
Kind of, yeah. I don't want to claim
Yeah.
But so
I'm glad that you went with hyperlapse. So walklapse doesn't have quite the same zing.
At the time then on that forum, it was a couple of dudes trying to figure out what this person did in Russia. And we went testing and that's how I got that test footage. And like, with these settings on the stabilizer and if you shoot it like this and with a lens that wide and if you go... And now you literally, I've got a playlist with 10 hyperlapse tutorials on my YouTube channel. I've made, for some reason I've made over the years, I mean, I've got like 600 videos on my channel, but I've made 10 tutorials about hyperlapse. And just, that's just me. There's so many different videos, all these like niche techniques that were bleeding edge at one point. All that knowledge is now just out there. Mm-hmm. And when hyperlapse started, I was very protective of all this testing and like what we figured out. And I was, in a way, I guess, selfish. It's like, I don't want to share this. We worked hard for that. That's our knowledge. Why should we share this really cool technique? Like, we'll lose money because other people will be able to do it. And then one day you go on YouTube and someone's made a hyperlapse tutorial and it's got 250,000 views. And you're like, that could have been me. Damn. So, yeah, since then,
all bets are off.
Everything's on YouTube. So pretty much all of my knowledge is on my YouTube channel. So I got so many videos. And then I've made it easier for people that want to get into it. I've just made an ebook that you can just buy.
Right. So now that you have put all this information out there, what is stopping someone like myself watching all your videos, downloading your book, and then taking all your hyperlapse jobs?
Oh, there's so much more to... so much more to...
It's not as simple as knowing.
I feel like you notice that difference with a lot of younger photographers. There's a bit of naivete. Like, you got to know how to run a business. You need to figure out insurance and sustainable ways of working, both in a physical and from a mental point of view as well. There's mm-hmm. so much more to it. And then there's client relationships and building up trust trust is a huge mm-hmm. thing. And you need to be able to show that you're reliable and that you'll do good work and that you're not going to destroy someone's budget with stupid stuff. Like, there's more to it than just being able to shoot cool footage.
Mm-hmm. And that's sure a part that a lot of people overlook is the business side of things, the business end. And even on the skills end as well, you know, it's not as easy as just, watching some YouTubes and
yeah, because there's what do you do in this case? What if it starts raining? Exactly. Will you be able to do it? Or like,
you need to physically
go through all
of those challenges as well. And that's what builds up your skills. It's the same as, you know, just reading a textbook.
Yeah.
And then going out and actually doing the practical.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, now we can come back to what you were asking before, because this wasn't my list of questions. You know, you asked, do you need a niche?
Mm.
I get that question a lot. A lot of people ask, should I specialize in one area and put everything to one type of photography and market myself as this kind of photographer? Or should I try everything? Should I try and be pretty good at everything?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it would be great to talk to you about it, because I feel like we've kind of taken different approaches here.
I mean, if I think of you, I think of like an insanely skilled, knowledgeable, talented, visionary all-rounder. You're welcome.
No, thank you. That's like, going straight on my testimonials page.
I've never seen you do something that wasn't just really great. That to me is like, it's great. But I think you only do that because that's what you like to do. And I think I've just had that realization when people are like, should I specialize? Should I go back to, what is it that you want to do? Do you want to be specializing in studio portrait or macro or jewelry? If that's what you want, then you should chase that. Mm-hmm. Obviously, got to be able to maintain it as a business and stuff. But I mean, I didn't know I was going to be able to do this until when I moved to Australia and, you know, met people with the right budgets. They enabled a lot. And then all of a sudden I had this realization like, oh, actually I can make this into a thing. So I'm going to go for it. Like, that's going to be my niche, time-lapse. Even though I wanted it initially, I thought it was unrealistic to do that.
I think that's the right answer. I think you have to chase where the passion is, you know, and make that.
Otherwise, it's not sustainable.
Make it a passion decision, not a business decision. Because if you have the drive for it, if you have the passion for it, the business part should follow. Yeah. Were you about to argue just then?
No. Fully agree. It's like that. That's a very, very good point. But the other thing is like, people see stuff on social media, which is so fleeting evaporative. Okay, there's a lot of good with social media, but I feel like there's a lot of people trying to follow trends, or like they see like, cool car shots. Like, I'm going to do cars and like just that. Like, is that sustainable? Do you like it because it's a trend and it's getting lots of engagement, or is that your passion and like, is that what you love doing, like creating automotive photography? But yeah, I don't know. I think same with anything. Like, if someone's like, I want to do YouTube, I want to do this, like, what should I do? It's like, just be you. And I think you posted this on your Instagram story the other day on something. Like, if you have something that is you, that is uniquely you, keep that. And it's kind of in the same genre, because otherwise it's not sustainable and you won't be able to keep doing it for 10, 20, 30 years.
Because it's not going to be an easy ride and it's not going to be great all of the time. Not even most of the time. when the challenges start coming at you, you need that passion and that interest in there to be there to fight back, you know. And I think very quickly you'll realize if you're doing something just for a trend or not, because when the going gets tough, you'll realize, why am I doing
this? Because I never expect this to happen to me. Have you had a burnout, like, creatively or through your career, where you just kind of fell out of love with what you did or what you were doing at the time?
No, I can't really pinpoint any particular time where it's really hit. I think just a gradual, there's always a
something's
little
happening.
base level of, I guess there have been times it hasn't manifested in anything too bad, but there's definitely been some, you know, some mishaps along the way. Things like leaving hard drives on planes or just doing something really silly And then you look and you step back and you say, why did that happen? That's really stupid and that would not normally happen. And then you start realizing just because I'm just pushing myself so far now that
sleep deprivation,
the cracks are starting to form. And you know, there has never been like a massive chasm formed, but definitely cracks. And that's when that's a signal to me to tell myself, hang on, you're probably pushing yourself too hard. You're making stupid mistakes now.
Mm-hmm. God, I hope it's not a hard drive every time. Oh, that's a sign. That's a tell. You should probably. You need to carry dummy hard drives. Hard drives for you. Send signals about your mental state. No, the reason I asked is because with being so in love with the whole time-lapse, hyperlapse thing, never expected that to change. But then I had so much work lined up years and years ago and I fell out of love with it. And at the time, that was just like a mini burnout creatively. And it killed that passion and that drive and creativity and energy and everything. Flow had none of that for like a few months. And I was like, it's the only time I've stopped shooting time-lapse was that period. Cause I was like, I need to finish all this work, put the camera away, take some time off, revisit it, come back fresh, which is what I did. And I'm glad I kind of was conscious of what was going on. But yeah, that was so strange. Cause I'm like, you know, by that time, that was my entire adult life. My entire career, my business was this thing. And then all of a sudden I wasn't enjoying it anymore. And I think that's what people, when hobby amateur photographers are like considering, I want to go full-time photography. That's kind of like what some people warn you about. Like, oh, you'll fall out of love with it. I think that only happens if you aren't working in a sustainable way. So sustainability is a key factor, I think, yeah.
Speaking of sustainability, this might be a nice time to talk about passive income.
Ooh, which nice is pivot, an interesting, nice segue.
It's an interesting topic because it's not something that a lot of photographers think about. Mm-hmm. Or if you're like me, you think about and then think,
wouldn't that be nice?
Wouldn't that be nice, but how? And would anyone care? And does anyone even want to invest in me in that kind of way? So I'd love to talk to you because you're very well versed in this area. You've written an ebook about it. Mm-hmm. Maybe explain very, very briefly what is passive income? What forms of passive income could a photographer
look good to achieve? Niche down, I guess, because passive income has many, you know, forms. Investing in anything is passive income as well, if it's a good investment, I guess. But
let's talk about something like Patreon. Let's just zone in on that.
Okay, so Patreon to me is a great thing, and I wrote a huge blog post about it, trying to help out fellow creatives because I'm like, I know you might feel iffy about it or like, why should I ask my followers for money? You know, isn't that weird? And that's how I felt about it before I started Patreon a bit over 3 years ago now, I think. But then I had a conversation with a YouTuber. He reviews Game of Thrones episodes. And I was talking, because I knew he had quite a successful Patreon page with hundreds of supporters. And I was like, I don't know, I can't bring myself. I'm like, you know, it's my responsibility to run a business and be sustainable and have money to come in. Why should I ask money from my fans or my followers? And he's like, buddy, you're looking at it the wrong way. And literally this one line changed it for me. He's like, all you're doing is giving people the opportunity to support you and to be closer to you because they want to support you and they want to be involved. So you're giving them this outlet. It's like an artist making merch, you know? Mm-hmm. I want to buy this band's shirt or the hoodie or the jumper because I like what they do and I want to own part of it. And Patreon's kind of like that. Plus, then you get benefits as well, depending on the creator. But for example, everything I post goes up on Patreon a day early or longer. I make exclusive videos for Patreon. You get like, you know,
I like the merch comparison.
Yeah.
Because I know that I've bought a ton of band t-shirts over the years and maybe only 50% of that purchase decision is based on whether I like the t-shirt or not.
Yeah.
The other 50% is I just love what you're doing and I want to show my support for you and I want you to benefit from it because you're doing awesome things. Like this will help you keep going.
And the other thing the guy said, he's like about the whole asking for money. It's like the only people that will give you money are people that really want to give you money. Mm-hmm. And when I heard that, I was like, oh, That makes a lot of sense. You can't force people to give you money. Like, if they don't want it, it's not going to happen. So the people that do it, you know, they're very, you know, they're like your core fan group or followers or fan, yeah.
Okay, so what about some other kinds of passive income streams, such as, you know, education, ebooks, online courses?
Yeah, so I qualify those as digital products. And the reason it's digital is because there's no shipping costs, there's no handling fees or personal or anything. Like, I wake up and I look at my phone like, oh, I've sold 3 books the last night in my sleep. That's great. It's amazing. Didn't have to print any labels and go to the post office. Like, it's all fully automated and set up to just run in the back. And that's the beauty of it. And I do have to say, like, I think the definition of passive income is income for which you have to do little or no work. And that is, you know, you do have to maintain whatever it is that you're building, your social media channels or your following or anything. And to set all that up takes a bit of time. And it's because I spent so long figuring out for myself how to set all that up. I was like, look, I'm just going to write this down in an ebook and sell that. And it's kind of like a meta thing, because I've done 2 time-lapse ebooks before that. And this is the 3rd ebook I've done, which is about how I did the previous ebooks and how much money I've made with that and how that's supported literally all of my travel rent and expenses for over a year.
So if you were talking to another photographer about, you know, let's explore some income streams for you.
Yeah. If I could make up an ebook that you would write now, like, all right, Jared's saying, great all-around shooter. I know you have valuable knowledge when it comes to building a relationship with a client or pitching an idea to a client, or how do you tackle a travel project where you have to make photo and video content.
Sorry, let me just write these down.
And like, honestly, and then like list the tools that you use, which accounting software. Like, you could talk about your photography business because you've been doing it for a long time in a very successful way. And talk about social media. So right off the bat, there's 3-4 chapters that you can just waffle on about. And as long as it's valuable, what it is that you're writing down, either from an educational point of view or an entertaining point of view, there's value there, and people, there's an exchange. And money flows to whoever provides the most value. It's kind of the way life is, really. Mm-hmm.
And what would you say to, let's say there's a mid-level photographer, mid-career, what do you say to someone who says, okay, great, I would love to explore, you know, different ways that I can run my photography business, like passive income, but I don't think I know enough, or there's way more people out there that you know more things than me. So like, why would I expect somebody to?
Some people might want to hear it just from you because they want to hear your story or the way you've experienced it. But that being said, like, again, this value, you can't, if I just picked up a camera and I decided to write an ebook about photography or whatever, like, that's not credible. Like, there's no authority there. You have to, at least I think, have that self-awareness to realize, like, I don't feel like I'm cheating people by selling them something. Like, with my status in the whole time-lapse industry, I felt very comfortable making an ebook about time-lapse. And then I waited a year and I analyzed all these other income streams that I've got. There's like 5 in total. And I was like, let's now make a book about this. Like, this has been a success. Here's how I did it. But yeah, for the person that is like starting out, I don't know, it's probably not the right thing for you to write an ebook, because what's your story if you have one? But then there's other things, you know, you can review cameras or whatever. You can make a blog on social media and run ads on it, or find affiliate programs or referral programs for stuff in your niche, like software. This month I've made like 500, I've had my best affiliate month for this one piece of time-lapse software. I made like $560 in affiliate sales for this one piece of software. And those clicks, those sales come through 2 videos that I made earlier in the year about this software. I just keep ticking through. Mm-hmm. And that's one of many streams, and they all add up. And I didn't realize how much money I was making until I put it in a spreadsheet. And because it was like $50 here, and then Amazon affiliate program, like $40 there, and then Patreon, like a couple hundred, and this. And then I started counting it up. I was like, oh wow, I've actually been consistently covering my rent and then some for quite a while now, which is what made me, I was like, oh, you're doing a good job. You should write an ebook.
I think it's great to hear you talk about this, because it's not, I feel like it's a very overlooked area of business, an untapped, you know, potential for a lot of photographers out there.
Overlooked, definitely. But then you, as soon as you start looking into it, and that's why I want to start a second YouTube channel about not just e-commerce, but I guess maybe the business side of it. I haven't fully figured it out yet, but I want to be able to talk about this in videos and blog posts, because I am really passionate about it, but it doesn't fit on my main, you know, pretty visuals account.
All right, so we're going to have to wrap this. It's been awesome talking to you. One last question. Should have probably asked it before. R5, you going to get it?
I'm very much hoping so, yeah. I think I've been waiting on this camera for so, so long.
What about the R5 is particularly beneficial to you and with what you do? I mean, for me, it was being able to combine photography and video beast mode onto one machine. And that's very valuable to me because I do so much stuff on the road. I need to take as little gear as I can. And I'm used to taking lots of gear, lots of kit to do, you know, all these different facets of one job. Now it's like, this can all be done with this one backpack full of things. I haven't looked, you know, too much into, you know, the time-lapse side of things or...
Yeah, I made a video about it. It's got like two built-in time-lapse modes and you can shoot with the remote, which is great. I'm just very excited about this. Obviously, there's a huge focus on the RF lenses and I haven't shot with any. I haven't seen any of them, how they perform in real life, but I'm very excited to try it out. The fact that it's 45 megapixels. I mentioned this earlier. I used to have a 5DSR and then I think it was 50.1 megapixels. It was too much for me at the time. But now I'm ready. I got a new laptop. Like I can deal with these files. And just to be able to, you know, 8K videos, not something I would do a lot. I think it's good to have the option, but you can make very high res time-lapse files with those pixels. Plus still do a lot of video that dual pixel autofocus unparalleled. Like I don't think anyone comes close to how good that performs. I'm shooting on it right now and like I'm moving in and out and the focus just tracks flawlessly. So
I'm very excited that the internal intervalometer is back in the R5 because I believe it's not in the R.
I don't think it's in the R. I never had an R, but I did make a video about it on launch.
Well, I've been using it as my main camera lately. I really, really have warmed to the mirrorless system.
So would you, if you could make a kit, would it be R5 and R6 or R5 and an R? Or what's your... So you had to have question. Two bodies. Or would it be two R5s?
It'd probably be two R5s. Well, I mean, I would have to... the one thing I would have to test is how the different bodies perform in low light.
True, because the R6 would have bigger pixels. Yeah.
Yes, and if it's significantly better with the R6, then there's a case for, oh, maybe I do need an R6 in the bag for when, you know, for when I really need to push it. Yeah. I am assuming it's quite similar actually, but you know, yet to be seen because I haven't had a test run of the R6 yet. Well, it's been awesome talking to you. I think photographers will get a lot out of this conversation. You've covered a lot of ground and very valuable information. Where can people check out your work if they don't know already?
MattJoes.com is my hub. I try to post as much as I can on my blog, keep people up to date, and then my YouTube channel and social media channels. I'm pretty much Matt Joes everywhere. If you like time-lapse, come stop by, have a look, learn something, come hang out.
Awesome. I'll catch you next time.
Cool, man. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Matthew.
Bye.